Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
This is our July 5th reviews issue. Yes, we all still have 30 fingers total.
Thank
in
you.
The room, even though it is post-4th. You not had to think about like, it for a minute.
I might have some smoke damage, but it's fine.
It's all right. That's fine.
Smoke inhalation. Psychological damage, just because I was watching Stranger Things.
As Evan Gidner did on the 4th.
Yeah.
So we are going to talk about Lois Lane, number one. But first, we have Sea of Stars, number one. Written by Jason Aaron, little writer you might have heard of, potentially, with art by Dennis Hallam.
Written by Jason Aaron and Dennis
Hallam. Oh, written by Jason and Dennis Hallam, excuse me.
With art by Stephen Green
and Rico Renzi coloring, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, and man, we gotta talk about the colors.
Yes. So, the first page of this just is great. It's this beautiful splash page of this boat-like spaceship flying through this beautiful intergalactic nebula kind of thing, and the dialogue just reads, "Space is so crapping boring."
I can only relate to this kid on so many levels. I can't even mention it.
I know, in though, this. Right? Oh, man. Yeah, so
when Anna's like, "Yeah, Star Trek space is so crapping boring."
So just to give a quick rundown, spoilers here: it's a son and his dad doing some sort of run. It's for the dad's job.
I think he's basically like a space mailman.
Yeah, or like a trucker or something like that. He's wearing like a trucker hat and everything.
That's like attached to his awesome spacesuit.
Yeah, no, it's like part of the spacesuit is this like hat. But yeah, the dad and his son. The son's bored because it's space. Which if it wasn't Stephen Green and Rico Renzi, space is actually pretty boring. and then the ship gets attacked by some giant.
I think we even talk about the kid in the cargo bay looking at everything, and he picks up the skull and just
Tucks it over his head.
Yeah. He gets attacked by some giant space squid.
Yeah.
And then the dad is eaten, potentially killed. And then the son, because of grabbing some sort of one of the artifacts that they were transporting, he now can talk to these space creatures and can breathe without a space
suit.
This
just made me think of, like, Timon and Pumbaa when they found Simba.
Yeah, you know what's funny?
Perfect.
Did you guys have voices for them? Because I found as I was reading it, I was reading like they were specific characters. Like the big whale looking thing sounded a lot like Eeyore to me. And then it was like the way I imagine Momo's voice in Avatar The Last Airbender was, Starfarts, it's still alive.
Yeah, I kind of saw some.
It's a bit Rafiki now that you say Lion King.
Yeah, I don't know why I had, now that you mention it, I had like a Brooklyn kind of thing going in my head, like, "Oh man, it's alive." I mean, its skin is all torn up, it's gotta be dead. I have no idea why.
I just saw this and thought of Timon and Pumbaa when they found Simba in the middle of the desert.
So for you, were you reading it as Timon and Pumbaa,
yeah,
essentially?
It was.
That is pretty perfect. Yeah, and so, like, and he can breathe in space and swim, quote unquote.
Yes,
in
swimming
space.
In space. Sea of Stars. Aha!
Yeah.
Sea.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and there's no coincidence that, like, all the space creatures are designed after sea creatures, and the spaceship has a sail on it, which is actually, I can get into the science behind that, which is a real thing.
Right.
Riding the solar winds. That's, like, actually how they're trying to design some spaceships now. But
I had a funny, like, ironic meta moment where the kid grabs that artifact, and to me it looked like a hammer, and it was Jason Aaron writing this, and it just made me laugh. It was like, he grabbed Mjolnir, and he becomes a space warrior.
That's the exact thought I had. He gains his space powers after wielding the space hammer.
He holds this hammer shall possess the powers of space!
Well, because when he initially grabs it and it, like, activates, fights, it kind of almost looks like Thor summoning a lightning bolt, too.
Yeah, that's my favorite pages in the book. I was, like, the giant space monster and then the Kirby dots and the explosion. This book is gorgeous.
Yeah.
This book is gorgeous. Like, that to undersell that would be, would be terrible.
Yeah.
I can't think of another, like, way of saying it. It's, like, it was so beautiful to go through. I wasn't a huge... I didn't know Stephen Green. When I saw the previews for this book, I immediately started looking him up and followed him on Instagram because it's so pretty. And the line work, you know, for me, I'm a big ink guy, and you can just see the ink lines in this. And the characters have a level of realism, but at the same time, they're being cartooned with their facial expressions and proportions.
And I realize it took me a minute, but Rico Renzi is one of the main colorists for Squirrel Girl, so I've been reading a lot of
really?
So I've been reading his work for quite a while now.
Yeah.
And, and coloring-wise is just beautiful.
What's the obsession with space sharks as of lately, too? Because the Quark Shark is, like, a big moment of conversation in this, and space sharks, I feel like, have been in, like... in a bunch
Cosmic
of different comic
Ghost
books.
Rider,
Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Space Sharks.
I think there was something about, like, land sharks and
West Coast Avengers.
I feel like space sharks came about in one of the Thor books, too. They were talking about them. So, like, yeah.
Maybe it's all writing off the Meg.
Yeah, right?
Like, now that I say the Meg, too, there has been a lot of
shark stuff.
Things.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's Jaws nostalgia.
Maybe.
Finally hitting.
Maybe.
Because it would be about 30 years ago that Jaws came out. Yeah. Roughly. So, Quark Shark. What a Quark great Shark. Name, though.
And,
and then this giant squid type thing.
Oh,
too,
my
that,
God.
Like.
So, I've been waiting, and I keep saying this, for the weird meta thing to happen where the artwork for Into the Spider-Verse was heavily inspired by old printing problems that existed with comic books.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been waiting for that translation into comics themselves, so like a reissuing of that style. And I feel like this almost does it, using like colorized dots to shade things, using speed lines again, using the bright colors and things existing outside of the characters themselves, creating separation through things.
They look like rocks.
The teeth rock. Well, that's perfect, right? Like, they almost look like they're alive unto themselves.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So, I was gushing about this book. I actually reread it a second time just to have it fresh in my mind to make sure that it wasn't just, like, overglowing off of it, you know? So.
Mm-hmm.
Holy balls, what are you?
I'm definitely interested to pick up the second issue of this one.
Yeah, this is a subscribe for me. Kat, how did you feel about this? Because you were not a space person.
I mean, it was an interesting story, but, you know, you hit the... Oh, my God, is that, like, supposed to be, like, the Declaration of Independence in there or something? Holy shit.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
I don't know. It just looks like something very old. It might be kind of, like, a Greek kind of thing, but I don't know. I'm more of an on-the-ground kind of person, not floating through space kind of person, so if they land on a planet, I might get more interested, but...
See,
it was interesting. I didn't hate reading it the entire time I was reading it, like I normally think I normally would. But usually with stuff like this, because the way that it works for Silver Surfer is it's totally cosmic, but he ends up on a planet and it grounds him. Does that make sense?
But
I mean, no, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying, but I would assert that this actually, to me at least, it feels, even though it is in space, it feels like a ground level story. It's just a dad and his son on a business trip, and then the dad gets killed in a car accident.
Interested in what's around you, so like, how do you characterize something that's technically infinite and forever?
Because it takes place on the ship, and then he hits like an asteroid.
I think we're going to see several different planets that things will be on.
I mean, yeah, it's space, so if they don't go to multiple planets, then they're losing.
And I like learning an in-depth area of where you're at. And if you're traveling to different ones, I get a little... Sometimes I just get overwhelmed is really what it comes down to.
I can feel
And that's
that.
Probably a lot to do with why I'm not a huge fan of space, because there's so much to it. And I get... And I want to know something front to back.
I feel like you can lose yourself in a small setting, though. Like, think about, like I'm just thinking about New York City right now, where, it's where you go a block and you're in an entirely different environment.
Well, I also think about exploring characterization through the lack of an environment. So you're actually exploring the characters more because the environment isn't so much important. It's the isolation, the fact that there is nothing to ground them that makes the characters interesting. Interesting. How do they react in that way? And you focus just solely on the characters, so...
Cat's still over there, like...
She's like, nah, you're just wrong.
Well, no, I'm, like, sitting over here. It's just, I don't know. I have a huge thing with scenery, so, like... Mm. Yeah, it's... And I'm not saying that it's not pretty.
I'm like, you're going to talk about scenery. Like,
I don't know. I don't know really. I don't really know how to explain it. It's very... Because I've always had... Because I don't... Obviously, I don't have a problem with this kind of stuff because I'm reading Justice League right now. But it's also... Kind of pinpointed to the Earth, though, and what's happening to it because something at the furthest end of the universe broke. So. Yeah,
that's true.
I do get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing some.
No, it's fine. Everyone's allowed to poke holes into things. I'm saying that's it. I'm not saying that you can't. It's just I think that's what it is. A lot of the time, is I get too overwhelmed.
I can totally see that.
I'm like, okay, so I know the characters, and I'm trying to learn the characters, but what's this weird planet you're on? But we're also now learning about the planet.
as long as there's ground to, like, put your feet on.
You usually do a little bit better. I'm like, oh, look, floor.
I wonder what that says about you.
Me?
Analytically, like, the... Anyway,
any psychologist listening, right? Please leave comments for Kat.
Well, the biggest thing for me, and you can see it translate into a lot of things that I do, including my job and a lot of how I am. I like knowing things like front to back, side to side. Like Metropolis. I understand Metropolis because it's Metropolis, and I've been reading about it for years. Yep. I've been watching it for years.
You crumple up the piece of paper and throw it over your back perfectly into the trash can. Basically. Because you know it's right there.
Exactly. So that's kind of the stuff.
It's funny you said Metropolis, and my mind went to the anime. Metropolis. I'm like, that's a really confusing thing. All right, well, moving on.
Wow. All right, next.
Great comic.
All right.
Yes. Next. Why don't who's taking it away?
I will be introducing Lois Lane number one, written by Greg Rucka with art by Mark Perkins. Mike Perkins.
I can't remember.
I apologize.
Mike, he should know. That's like the one thing. Stranger Things.
I will give Marvel Comics is they always put that stuff right in the front of the book, and DC's like, you'll never know where we're going to put it.
No, oh, really? Patrick Sheehan is he's like, no, it's
maybe
all over
it's
the place
now.
Maybe
just all the ones I pick up.
they do a lot of them, especially Black Panther, though, which is
okay,
always...
Okay,
Ta-Nehisi
Coates is like, you know what? I'm just going to screw with you this entire book.
So they always have the cold opening, the credit sequence, then, like, story proper, like a good TV show.
I'm
already off track.
I wasn't expecting to enjoy this as much as I did. I actually really like this. I'm not a huge fan of the artwork in this. I think it fits the story, but it's not my cup of tea.
Okay.
So
I like the artwork on the front of the I got the variant cover because it's awesome looking.
Yeah, you got the Jenny Frizen cover.
Mm-hmm. What's the... Oh,
nice. She's the
Carmen
variant.
San Diego.
Yeah, it looks very good in San Diego, actually. That's hilarious. And the globe does not help, like,
no,
being on her hat.
No, she's wearing the fedora. It's a red background.
Yeah. It's very Carmen San Diego. That's hilarious. Where in the world is Lois Lane? I like her characterization a lot. Like, you can definitely see that she is constantly moving. Like, her thought process is going. You know, there's never a pause. There's not even a pause to answer people's questions that are talking to her. Like, she's just going.
Yeah, because the whole first page is the maid in her hotel room, like, asking her if she wants to restock the minibar. And you just hear tack 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 typing away on the. And from, like, a writer's perspective, I love the fact that she can't spell because I cannot spell. It's like you literally spend every moment of your life writing. How do you not know how to spell words? Like, you know the prop, like, how to use collusion and syndicate.
Well, that's the other
like,
thing,
because
I also
sentences.
Do, like, some writing. I haven't in a while because I don't have any free time. But I also can't spell.
Well, I also love the fact that she's like, you can turn off the autocorrect. Like, I honestly just thought I bludgeoned it into submission.
Yeah, which also, for me is a real
And then
thing
the best
because...
part is when he's like, Bludgeon doesn't have two O's.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally a thing because, like, God, I've added so many random words to, like, the dictionary on my, like, on my word that it really, at this point, doesn't know what I'm trying to spell.
Right.
Sorry. It's just, personally, I connected. I never thought I'd connect to Lois Lane so much, and I feel like she's my spirit writer.
Yeah. I like that Rucka threw a little bit of, like, the modern problems into this, too, like, a modern society where, since she was caught kissing Superman, she's being labeled negatively, but Superman's
See,
not.
Yeah, but how do you label Superman negatively when he saves your asses all the time?
Well, yeah, that's true, but like...
Because that was kind of my thing with it when they did that, and I was like, I see what you're saying, and I get it, but Lois Lane is a reporter that nobody gives a shit about in reality.
She is a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah.
How many people care about that, though? On the street.
I mean, a lot.
I think in Metropolis, it's hugely important because of the number of events and things that happen there.
Yeah,
because
she works for the Bugle, which is essentially the city paper.
Not the Bugle. The Bugle
the sorry.
Oh my god,
Planet.
I'm leaving.
I'm getting J. Jonah Jameson and G. Gordon Godfrey.
Yeah, nice.
Works for the Daily Planet, which is like the Metropolis city newspaper. That'd be like living in New York and being working for the New York Times, being like one of their, being their literally their top reporter who's like whose name
who
on
goes
the byline
directly against the president with, you know, and make sure her name's in capital letters when she does these things. You know, she goes after Lex. She's big time, like the big time of big time.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she's the reporter that can get those stories out just because her name is on it.
Yep.
So, like, the other portion of it is, though, is,
totally jumped all over you.
No. The thing is, like, the dude that bumps her and says shit like that, for me, I was like, like I said, for some people, I don't know how to explain it in my head of why. Because, like I said, I'm like, how do you shit on the dude who saves you all the time from, like, missile attacks?
You know, I think that's another societal thing that we're going through right now is what is acceptable for celebrities.
Yeah,
you know, I wouldn't dignify him as a celebrity. I'd be careful that I don't have a very high opinion of celebrities.
Well,
but you can't deny that's what he is.
He is. I mean, the celebrities come in different shapes and sizes. I mean, like you would consider like Beyonce to be a celebrity in the most traditional sense, but you could also say, you know, Shaq is a celebrity. And, like, at this point, you have, like...
You're going for not limelight. That's a bad word to use. The person in the spotlight, I would go with that. If we're going that characterization, I can see what you're saying.
We also don't have a frame of reference. You know, superheroes don't exist. So we don't really know what level of celebrity we'd be dealing with at that point in time.
We also are
way off the topic of, like, what the book is.
Yeah, right?
Okay, so going back, I just want to say, like, this is definitely... And I'm sure that you probably have some things to say about it, Kat, but it's super political. It's incredibly, like, hitting into all sorts of modern not necessarily problems, but, like, it parallels the things that are happening in the political sphere currently, directly.
Yeah.
Like, it's very interesting to me that the press secretary, her last name is McCarthy, because that's the guy that ran the Red Scare trials back in the 60s.
Yeah, I caught that.
And she's like the press secretary, which is definitely illustrated after current press secretaries.
I have to say, like, how overtly political this was, as I was reading this, I actually out loud went, uh-oh, Kat's not going to be
I had the same exact thought, because I was like, I'm like, more intrigued the more politics is being talked, and then I'm like, oh no, Kat.
Well, I think if this is her actual characterization as like a person now in comparison to the 50s, I know why I hate her so much. I finally figured it out after reading this, and that it really comes down to the comment where he's like, well, I thought you just bludgeoned it to death. Me personally, I cannot stand people like that. I thought you just bludgeoned it to death. And I'm like, oh, God, that's such an ineffective way to do anything ever.
She's the straight, headstrong person. Like, that's it, you know.
But she's... So the way that I look at it is in the 50s, she was a damsel in distress and, like, like this. And now she's so far on the other side, I'm like, can we just, like, maybe, like, hit just in the middle instead of one extreme to the other? Because now I don't want to buy it.
I like
but that's really what it is they took her character from one extreme to the other to prove a point. And I'm like, you can throw it down the middle, too. You don't have to go this far. And the other thing is, too, like I said, I don't like people who bludgeon things to death because I'm like, stop talking to me. Go away.
Oh, I think there's different, like, avenues, but I think that her character, this makes most sense because it's almost like she's pushing herself so far past humanity in a way that, like, she almost feels untouchable by, like, the government. You know, like, what are they going to do to Lois Lane? Well, whatever you do, she's going to have a comeback, so maybe you'll put her in jail, but everybody in the free world is going to know what happened and know exactly what was done. So.
Interesting. Yeah,
so I guess the other part of it is, too, is she might have that plan per se, but, like, the other half of it is how does that affect Clark? How does that affect, how do you think that's going to affect him as Superman? How is that going to portray him in his limelight? I see her as a very self-centered character. I don't do well with that.
Is this in continuity?
I don't know. I don't.
It's part of the Leviathan event, so I would say yes.
Okay, so
because that was the thing too. Because right now she's and I like that I like her in Leviathan more, working with Batman, and I think it's probably just watching the two of them smash heads.
Well, it also the question being somebody that she's directly utilizing. And the question appearing in the Leviathan event means that the question was there as Lois's kind of bodyguard.
That's true.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
Because she definitely uses the question as, like, kind of a tool to get information or to, like, move the story the way that she needs it to.
Yeah. Well, because I feel like in Leviathan, that's her, like finding out the facts reporting side. But this, like, is her, like, journalism side, like her, like writing.
In Leviathan,
and her, like,
I feel like as a character, she's. This is gonna sound weird, but she's like a more thought driven. This is I have my plan, but there's no backup plans, and for me, I'm like God.
Because she is trying to piece things together still, and in this one, she has the pieces.
Well, I think it's the background versus the face. This is the face that Lois puts on.
Mm-hmm.
She has for the public persona of Lois Lane is what we see in this book, whereas that's her inner workings. What she really does, the way that she thinks, is the way that Bendis is writing her. And it's also the writing styles. Bendis is much slower paced than Rucka goes straight forward.
That's true, and that might be it too, but I mean, like I said, I think this is pretty much figured out why I have such a distaste for her, so.
Yeah, and I'm reading this one panel right here, which I really like, but I can see how you didn't when she's just like, I need you to answer the question. Answer the question, Leanne. Answer the question. Just like, totally like reporter style, just like bludgeoning it, like the question to death.
I don't know, I always thought that she was, I guess this is gonna sound bad, she's highly intelligent, but the way that she comes off into this book, to me, is not, there's more spunk than intelligence, and I'm like, I feel like you're smarter than your spunk, but okay.
Interesting.
Yeah,
so I can see that, and that's kind of, I don't know, either way I figured it out, and I'm like, well, no.
I would say the biggest negative for me in this book is way too many words. It's way too
early. I knew that was going to happen. I was actually, when I opened it, I assumed that was what was going to happen just by the opening. Because I was like, look at all the word bubbles.
I mean, it's about a reporter, so I guess that makes sense. With stuff.
And I love this.
That's like, I don't want to read pictures.
Yeah.
I might just be biased to the fact that I love the words and the stories and the writing.
Right.
And this is a story
honestly,
about writing.
For me, I kind of, like, the one that I wanted to see is kind of like, I know when I mentioned it earlier, is... like her in Superman Unchained, I want to see her in a higher level event. And that's just a personal thing. I want to see her at a higher level event, her competing at a level she shouldn't be, but she's doing it anyways.
If this is tying into Leviathan, we're going to get that. We are running out of time, though.
Yeah, we are getting close to the end. A lot more to talk about than I initially thought, actually, from this.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. I didn't know I'll be reading it. Kat, you're definitely not be reading it.
I have the second issue, we'll see.
Oh, okay.
I usually give things two.
I feel like that's a good policy. Nah?
Probably not.
Fair enough. Mm. Alright. Well, cool.
All right.
Anyway, with that, I guess we should probably say bye then.
Bye!
Bye.